I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today I'm here with Tammy Dela Cruz, somebody that you might know from the news, who has something to say about being a mother in grief. Tammy, thank you so much for coming and for being so raw and honest with us. What is it that you would like to tell us today about your process?
The process of grief, I thought, was going to be a process of grief, but it does take different forms, but I think the realization is it just never goes away. And I think that the message I really want to send to people is that we all have, a lot of people put expectations on people who are grieving, and I'm trying to spread, you know, just by even putting on Facebook, that it doesn't really change like people think it does. I think we are just able to compartmentalize things a little bit, or maybe even fake it to make it type of situations. But grief is going to be part of me until I take it, until my last breath. It's going to be there.
And now for a little bit of the background. Tammy's son, Joey Gingerella, was murdered in December of 2016, about a year after I'd met you, Tammy, and Joey was the reason I met you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. On the early morning hours of December 11th, we just got home probably around 1 o'clock, and we had been on a fundraiser for Keeping Milford Warm. My son had been over at a local pub where he was at a going-away party for our neighbors who were moving. So about 1:37, maybe, I'm thinking, we were abruptly woke up by a phone call. I heard my husband say hello, and I could just hear my cousin screaming that Joey had been shot. And I couldn't wrap my head around. I just kept repeating myself, Joey's been shot? What do you mean Joey's been shot? And so close to the home that we were able to get in that car and drive to the scene and see all of the flashing lights and all of the tape, and the ambulance was still there. But I was assured by somebody that met us there, just get to the hospital. He's, you know, he's talking, he's going to be okay. That really wasn't the case. But I first went to, oh no, Joey's going to relapse because he's shot, he needs surgery, and he's going to have to get opioids for the pain. So I was so concentrated on his past history of drug problems that I thought, oh no, this is it. We're going to have this all over again. Little did I know, I drove to the L&M where I worked and sat down, and the nurse came out and I said, listen, I just want to let you know he's in recovery. And they said, that's the least of his problems. And I just stood there. And had to sit. And then I was just in shock until the point where they put us into a family room. Dr. Tucker, who I knew from the hallways, I worked there, you know, 16 years. They came in and I knew the drill, and she sat down and I just looked at her and said, I don't want to know. And you know, unless you're telling me he's going into surgery, I don't want you to talk to me. And she goes, I can't do that. So just to backtrack, Joey was at a bar and a girl and a guy came in at the end of the night. There was a disturbance between the two of them, a disagreement. My son did not witness it. The bartender was concerned when they left abruptly. She felt that the girl was in danger, asked my son to go outside and check on her. Of course, Joey would go out and check on her. But what he would find from, you know, the accounts during the trial was, you know, a man beating up a girl pretty good. My son intervened and another kid intervened, and my son stood in between and would not allow him back to the car. The bar did not call the police. At one point, they knew he wasn't back in the bar again. They yelled out, we called the cops, come back in, Joey. And everything escalated from there. He tried to get back to the car and make a long, you know, a very short story shorter, turned around and put 3 bullets into my kid.
Let's go back a little bit to your little boy, Joey. He was raised by you and his stepfather, Joe Dela Cruz, your husband, and in what sounds like a very normal and happy childhood, and was a standout baseball player, and then developed a problem. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Joey really shined in high school. His senior year was the best year of his life, he would always tell me. he really had hopes and dreams that he was going to go off to the major leagues, but at least first college. Joey wasn't the best scholar. He was a great baseball player. So there were some things he needed to work on, and I think the disappointment of his SAT scores, we did meet with a coach, and he said, go to Three Rivers for a semester, and I'll have you walk on in Danbury at Western Connecticut. And I tried to explain to him, this is a good thing, just one semester, Joey. But as he watched his friends leaving to Penn State and all these other prestigious colleges, and he just became depressed. And that's when I noticed he was smoking a lot of pot. And, you know, I still took it seriously. Some parents would say, well, it's the lesser of all evils. But for me, I knew there was a problem because he seemed like his eyes were always glossy. He seemed like he, and so the weed, you know, can become expensive if you're smoking that much during the day. And it was a very quick transition during that summer months of 2010 that he did experiment with a Percocet. And then when I say experiment, that's not just taking it orally. He sniffed a Percocet. And he was very open about that when he spoke at the school. But it took him right away.
Took him right away. And now let's fast forward to March of 2015 when Joey comes onto the stage at his alma mater. He's then in his, is he 22, 23 years old?
Yeah, 2015. 2010, he was 18, so he was 22, yeah. You were great.
And what was the purpose of that appearance on the stage at Fitch?
The purpose was, as a family, my husband was a town counselor, and we discovered through talking and being honest with Joey that there was a lot of addicted kids in our community, and we couldn't just sit back and be silent like the rest of the people that we were talking to. We went out and spoke to friends and said, listen, Joey's got a problem, you should know. Oh yeah, so does our kid. So we realized that no one was talking about it. And we had a really crucial conversation. I wasn't interested in following any guidelines other than our own family's guidelines, like NA or anybody else. And it's a great program, but I wanted our family to deal with this the way we felt best. So we came out as a family and discussed it. And I said, Joey, I think that you could save somebody. You could help somebody from your story. So he was nervous. And he did go there, but Vinnie Baker was gracious enough to open and speak about his story. And I think it gave Joey a little bit more confidence, a little more strength. But he was amazing. He was not a public speaker, and he was nervous, but it naturally started to come out. And when he told the story, there was things that I didn't hear before. And I think that was the start of Joey's healing.
Let's fast forward again to throughout that the rest of that year and into 2016, Joey is doing well, but struggling. And you and your husband and your close friends are gaining momentum with this grassroots group called Community Speaks Out. Can you talk a little bit about what you remember from that year until December?
Sure. So 2015 to August 21st, 2015, we sent Joey back to another rehab. The first time he admitted he wasn't ready to go. He just satisfied us. This time he had fallen deeper. One pill, two pills, it's just not going to cut it when you're in active addiction. So he had done everything, you know, that he was ashamed of, stealing from us. He was very open and honest afterwards about. But he went off to a rehab in Florida. We stood our ground. He wanted to come home. We said, nope, you don't have a place to come home to. Hardest thing we could have ever done, but we thought he was going to die if he came home. So he did his 60 days. He did return home, moved back to Florida for a short time, and came home again, and quickly had a, I'm not trying to laugh, but quickly I realized, you know, he had substituted opioids for drinking. So my concern started then.
Drinking for opioids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was drinking instead. And I think he kept saying, I'm 24 years old, Ma. You think the rest of my life I'm not going to go hang out at a bar or see my friends or have a beer? And I'm like, that's not what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about you having a drinking problem. You know, you are a person with a substance abuse problem, and it just doesn't usually, you don't have a shut off switch, you know? So there was some, process that we went through. But I got some really wise advice from someone from the Philippines, believe it or not. It was my husband's family member. And she looked at me and said, you need to meet Joey where he is right now. You need to repair, you know, some of the stuff that's happened, some of the things you've said to each other. And when you meet him where he's at, I guarantee you things will get better. So I had a conversation and met him where he was. And the next thing you know, he's in therapy. He got a job. It wasn't like I was concerned about the drinking every day. But, you know, Joey, in his mind, wanted to be what they would call now California clean and be able to go to the bar and have some drinks with his friends. And I accepted that as long as he wasn't driving a car, you know, and that's what I did. And so we still considered, and so did Joey, he was not giving up August 21st as his clean date. Because in his mind, his demon was opioids. And I still give him credit for that. He was clean of opioids. And I feel that we put a lot of pressure on not really giving them the credit for the work they've done. Instead, we look at them and just judge them. And I was done with all that. So
a lot of the work that Community Speaks Out has done is trying to erase that stigma.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the stigma, is not accepting them where they're at.
During 2016, really the opioid crisis came into focus in our region, in large part due to Community Speaks Out. You were organizing vigils, you were holding monthly support group meetings, and I attended one of those meetings, and I was really amazed that you and Joe were leading the meeting, and I thought to myself, these are parents that are fighting so hard to keep their son alive and that are sharing that battle, you know, and getting support from and giving support to the community. So that was a really awesome thing, Tammy. Fast forward again until December 1st, 2016. There was a vigil in Montville. What do you remember much about that?
Yes, I do. There had been some overdoses and they had decided to do a vigil. Do a vigil there in Montville. And my son actually asked to attend. And that was the first time he went to a vigil with us.
And I covered that that vigil for the day. And I do remember walking over to Joey and saying hi. And he had just done a television interview. And by this time, I knew Joey a little bit. And he said, boy, I hope I didn't sound stupid, you know. And I said, no way, Joey. You know, like, great job. And I just wrote in my story, like, I wasn't going to press him to try to get him to say give me a quote, right? Because he'd just been through this. So I wrote in my story, as you and the others were giving the speeches and listening to the parents, he stood nearby looking healthy. So that was what I observed about him on December 1st, 2016. And then, of course, 11 days later, his life was over. One more thing that I would like to add is that his funeral was held on the stage where he had stood up and told his story so bravely in March of 2015. And much has happened since then, including the trial and sentencing of his killer and another person, woman who was involved. And I know you have a pending lawsuit against the pub where this went down. Can you talk about how you're getting through, just a little bit more about how you're finding the strength?
Yeah, I've still had, there is another pending case, the criminal case too. The brother who helped hinder him to get out of the country. It's been, I will say, a roller coaster for me. One day I try to just push things. There's not one day that goes by that I can't. I'm thinking of Joey constantly. The reminders are everywhere, whether it's I walk in the door and his ashes are sitting at the top of the stairs with all his favorite things. I can't live without him, so I have to do that. I've gotten a tattoo on my arm because I can't not see him every day. As far as, you know, the pub goes, you'll be surprised. It tears people apart, a lawsuit. I have a lot of support, but, you know, there is a lot of resistance. People think it's all about money. And this is all about, you know, sending some messages that there were a lot of unsafe situations going on that night. The police should have been called and my son would be alive. And so for me, it's a lot more than money. Money's never going to bring my son back. But it's amazing how I've had to explain myself at times. But I'm done explaining myself. I did it. I'm done. I'm putting that behind me because I'm doing this for Joey. And for me, the rest of my life is going to be honoring my son, because this is not the right order to lose a child. You don't lose a child. You go. Your children live on. So for me, the rest of my life is going to be honoring my kid.